This is Digital Story Podcast number 607, October 31st, 2017. Today's theme is The Thrill of Fast Primes. I'm Derek Story. The best news to come out of Photo Plus Expo for me was the announcement of the new Olympus Pro F/1.2 Primes. But Olympus isn't the only one pushing the wide aperture envelope. Fast Primes by Fujifilm and other mirrorless camera makers are boosting not only capability, but price and bulk as well. And they are the subject of today's photography podcast. So I've been noticing and thinking about this the last few days. Bigger optics with hefty price tags are the current trend in mirrorless cameras. And in many ways, I view these new offerings as the maturation of this product category. Not only for Olympus, but for Sony, Fujifilm, and Panasonic as well. Pros and enthusiasts alike can now use these cameras and lenses for their work, for any kind of work. I mean, before mirrorless cameras were seen, I think, mainly as a travel camera, as a camera that was easy to carry around, something very nimble, right? That's why I became interested in them. But I think mirrorless has grown up, and not only in terms of capability, but also in size. But what this does mean for me, as a fan of Micro Four Thirds, is that I have some very tantalizing options for lens selection. I can go compact with a modest f1.8 maximum aperture, or super fast at f1.2. So how do I choose? Well, here's what I think. First, let's take a look at five of these tempting lenses by our favorite manufacturers, and then, you know, sort of break it down a bit. I'm going to look at a Fujifilm lens, a Sony, a Panasonic, and then we'll finish with two Olympus lenses, the two new ones that were just announced. So at the top of our list, we have the Fujifilm XF56mm f1.2R lens. And it is $899. And I'll tell you, compared to the other lenses on this list, that's a pretty good bargain. Now, because Fujifilm is a crop sensor, APS-C size, then that 56mm works out to be roughly 85mm. So it's f1.2 at the brightest end, and then f16 when you stop it all the way down. Now, it weighs 14.29 ounces, 405 grams. So this is a very nice little portrait lens for $899, f1.2, and you get to use it on your Fuji cameras. Not bad, right? For full frame, Sony has the FE85mm f1.4 GM lens. And that puppy dog's going to cost you $1,798. F1.4 to 16. And 1.8 pounds, 820 grams. Basically $1,800 and 1.8 pounds. It's a beast, right? It produces very nice backgrounds, a very sharp lens, quality materials all the way around. So Sony shooters got to pony up just a little bit more. Now, one of my favorite Micro Four Thirds lens that I never was able to buy was the Panasonic Leica DG 42.5mm f1.2, a spherical power OIS lens. And Panasonic does a great job of really giving us a nice long name for their optics. And it comes in at $1,597.99. So basically a $1,600 lens. It has an 85mm equivalent, the aperture range f1.2 to f16, and it is 15 ounces or 425 grams. So it's a little bit more in weight than the Fujifilm, but it is a beautiful lens. I've actually had a chance to shoot with this 42.5 on my Olympus cameras, and it does have heft. It has that nice big objective lens in the front, but it also is just beautiful to look through this lens and to focus and compose and do all that stuff with it. $1,600. So Sony at $1,800, Panasonic at $1,600, and as I said at the top there, Fujifilm coming in at a cool $900. Not bad. Now we get to the two Olympus lenses, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk about a bit more, because they're the new guys. And we have the 17mm f1.2 and the 45mm f1.2. I'll start with the 17mm. It will retail for $1,199, so it's a $1,200 lens. By the way, all three of the f1.2 Pro lenses, it's funny, they look roughly the same size. They come in at the same price, and they have the same maximum aperture. It's pretty cool. The other one, of course, is a 25mm f1.2, which I had an opportunity to shoot with in Iceland, and I just loved it. Now, the 17mm will be available in January 2018, so it's going to be just a bit yet before it's ready. It has a 34mm equivalent aperture range from f1.2 to 16. And it weighs 13.76 ounces or 390 grams. 390 grams compared to the Sony, of course, which is 820 grams, about half the weight of the Sony. It also weighs less than the Panasonic, and it weighs less than the Fujifilm 56mm. That's 405 grams. But 390 grams, you know, that's for Micro Four Thirds. You know, that is... you know, that's some heft, that's some weight. One of the things about both of these lenses, the 17mm, 45mm from Olympus, is that they have the snap focus. In other words, they have the manual focus clutch. So you can pull back on the focusing ring and then, you know, to manually focus. I love this. I have this on my 17mm f1.8 lens. It looks very traditional in that sense, is that you have all the lens markings and, you know, the apertures and all that sort of stuff. And it's really quite beautiful. But the other thing that they have, you know, the lenses that have this manual focus clutch, is they have a hard stop for infinity. When I do star photography or when I do night photography, and I can't really, you know, focus on the sky per se, I love having this. And my fastest lens is actually my Panasonic Leica 25mm f1.4 lens. And I just love that lens. I use it for product photography for the film camera shop. But I can't use it for this night photography because it doesn't have that hard stop at infinity. You know, you have to focus it. So this manual focus clutch is, I think, really, really a big deal. And it's just absolutely handy for certain situations. The companion lens that was announced, and this is the one I saved it for last, because this is the one that I'm most interested in. And that's the 45mm f1.2 Pro lens. It will also be $1,200, $1,199. And it's going to be available in November. So we're not that far away. We're only probably about a month away. It'd probably be near the end of November, but it will be available in November. It has a 90mm equivalent, so just beautiful for portrait work. F1.2 to F16 and 410 grams, a little bit more weight than the 17mm at 390 grams. And in ounces, that's 14.46 ounces. So these are a little bigger lenses. I was watching some of the videos on this 45mm, and I thought what was interesting about the 45mm as a portrait lens is that one of their visionaries was talking. She was she shoots children a lot, and she was talking about how wonderful this lens is because what it does is it has the focus goes from the nose to the ears at wide open at f1.2. So she still gets enough depth of field to go from the nose to the ears, but then it starts to trail off very smoothly at f1.2. And the bokeh is quite creamy. I didn't really realize you know, that this lens design really gives you the best of both worlds. Because a lot of times when you shoot with a super wide aperture lens, a portrait lens especially, on a larger frame camera, you know, such as, let's say, the Sony full frame, then that depth of field is really a problem, right? Because to the point where you have to make sure that you focus on the front eye, if the eyes are not perfectly squared up to you. Otherwise, the depth of field could fall off so fast that the other eye is out of focus. And for me, that's always presented a bit of a problem, because, or at least a challenge, because on one hand, I want to shoot wide open because I want that really soft background when I really want it. But I also want enough depth of field to do the portrait. And this 45 millimeter, now I haven't had a chance to shoot with it yet. Like I said, I've shot with the 25, but not the 45. If it is true what this photographer is saying, and she showed some wonderful images, then to be able to shoot wide open and have from nose to ears in focus and then have it trail off after that, wow. I mean, that sounds almost too good to be true. And I guess that's, you know, that combination of the little bit smaller sensor and then the lens design of the 45 f1.2. To me, I find that really exciting. And the reason why I'm focusing so much on the 45 of all these lenses is because I'm going to do a comparison here. When you're thinking about, well, there's a 45 f1.8 in the lineup already, and then they introduce the 45 f1.2. The lenses, in terms of their characteristics, are different enough to where there could be a very good case for having both, depending on, you know, what you shoot and how you shoot. Since I brought up the 45 millimeter f1.8, let's do a comparison right now. The 45 f1.8 is one of my favorite lenses in the lineup, so this is going to be fun. Going back to the 45 f1.2, it measures 2.76 inches by 3.34 inches, or 70 millimeters by 84.9 millimeters. Let's just say 85 millimeters, okay. 3.34 inches in its longest dimension. And as I mentioned before, it weighs 14 and a half ounces, or 410 grams. And it has a 9-blade aperture, which I think is, you know, part of the lens formula magic. Now, the smaller 45 millimeter f1.8 lens has a 7-blade aperture, as opposed to 9. It costs only $399. Compared to $1,200, and it comes in at 4.09 ounces, so essentially 4 ounces, and measures 2.2 inches by 1.8 inches, 56 millimeters by 46 millimeters. So that's quite a difference. It weighs 4 ounces versus 14 and a half ounces, $399, basically $400 versus $1,200, so $800 difference. You know, you might say on this, okay, I still get f1.8. I'm just going to go with that lens. In all honesty, that's not a bad way to go at all. I mean, I always felt that 45 millimeter f1.8 is one of the best values in Micro Four Thirds photography. But as I began thinking about it a bit more, the character of that lens is very different. The lens formula is different. You know, it has two less aperture blades and all that sort of stuff. And the idea, if I were a portrait photographer, well, then I'm going to be on assignment, and a bigger lens isn't going to make that much difference. And if I get that nose to ear in focus with the feathery background, then okay, then that lens is worth carrying for portrait shoots. So I would carry the f1.8 around when I'm just in everyday mode, in nimble photographer mode, or when I'm traveling or whatever. But then if I were on a shoot that was a very important shoot, either for a job or, you know, something that I was doing for someone else or for my portfolio or whatever, then I would want that other lens. And, you know, that's what got me thinking that mirrorless has grown up, because these are two very distinct options to have. And we have the same thing with the 17 millimeter, those options with the 25 millimeter, you know, they have a 25 millimeter, I think it's an F1.8. And then of course we have the, you know, the Panasonic 25 millimeter F1.4, which I have. you're going, wow, I can do just about anything now. And you put these lenses on, let's say, the EM1 Mark II. So then you've got crazy processing power, great sensor, all that kind of stuff. And I think that the argument that you can only use mirrorless for your travel or your personal work is starting to fade, because with optics like this, now we can use these cameras for basically any assignment. You have 20 megapixels with the EM1 Mark II, just like I do with my Pen F. So I've got good resolution, I've got fantastic lenses, and I have a very good imaging pipeline, and I have it in a more compact package. So I think these lenses, not only the Olympus lenses, but all the lenses, the Fujifilm, the Sony, and so forth, they really do mark, you know, the coming of age of mirrorless. And I think at this point in time, right now, with these optics coming out, that's what we're seeing. And that's what I want to know. So not only am I really tempted by that lens, the 45 in particular, but I'm also really happy just for mirrorless photography in general. And I'm excited about the direction of this. I really like what all the manufacturers are doing. So I'm going to put my request in. And for the moment, I'm just going to have to think how lovely it is that that lens is out there. And maybe it'll end up in my camera bag before too long. And in the meantime, I guess I'm just going to have to rough it with that 45 millimeter f1.8 that I love so much. All right. Good times indeed, wouldn't you say? A review of the TDS Wine Country Photography Workshop. So I'm just coming off the heels of this thing, and boy, what a blast I had. And, you know, it's so interesting in so many ways. There are so many storylines to this particular workshop. You know, it's the final workshop of the year. It's the first time I've ever combined wine tasting with a photography workshop. It's the first time that I've ever had a formal program for travel companions, that came along on the workshop. And then followed right on the heels of the firestorm that we've been talking about for the last 2 weeks. And so there was the discussion, well, should you go on with this workshop? And you know my position on that. So there was a lot of stuff here. And then there was my own physical fatigue from everything that I have been going through. That I haven't had very much sleep. I've been on the go. So we get to Thursday, which was the start of the workshop, and I had revised the schedule, and I had all my ducks in a row, and the folks came out, and we met at the studio to begin with, and then we took right off to head to Hopkiln Winery, which is up in Healdsburg, for our first wine tasting and shoot. I thought, hey, let's just jump in with both feet. No need to dilly-dally here. I had a 15-passenger GM van. So the van again wouldn't work for this because it only holds 7 and I needed to hold 11. And I couldn't have anyone else drive because we're wine tasting. Well, I wasn't wine tasting, but everyone else was wine tasting. So I had to have something that I could put everyone in so that I could be the driver and they could have a good time. So I get this 15-passenger van. This thing was a hoot. I had never driven one of these things before, this big GM van. It was brand new. It had like 140 miles on it. And we piled everyone in there. Even though it's a 15-passenger van, I would say I would not want one more person than what we had in there. They were already in fairly tight quarters, but we made it work. We definitely made it work. And I didn't hear too much complaining. You know, I think the wine kind of helped help soften that blow. But it was so fun for me, you know, driving this thing around through wine country, because it's not like we're just taking, you know, these 3-lane highways everywhere. We would go maybe on the freeway for a little bit, but then we're off on these windy roads through wine country, driving this thing around. So I loved it. I loved it. And it was fun. And so then we would get to our destination, and I said Hopkiln was our first place, which is one of the last hop kilns. And if you don't know what that is, hops are a major ingredient in beer making, and this used to be a wildly popular hops growing area. And these kilns were used to dry the hops and then package them so that they could be sold to breweries and other places that used them. And it's really kind of a whole neat process. And we had just this lovely, her name was Carrie, just this lovely expert to help us. We did the wine tasting, and then she gave us a tour. She took us, talk about behind the scenes. We went down to where the furnaces were in this thing. It's not being used anymore. It's a winery. However, all the parts are still there. And so we were wandering around down there. The guys were shooting. It was so interesting, so fascinating. And then after that, we went outside because it was later in the day, it was after four at this point, and we could shoot a little bit of landscape and color. Then I piled everyone back in the van, and you know, we headed back to the studio and closed it out for the day. And of course, I'm standing there. I like wine a lot. I love Sonoma County wine, so I'm sipping my water and just listening to everyone talk about, oh gosh, I love the Zin. Oh my gosh, this is so good. And the pretty colors and swirling it around and everything. Oh my, oh my, oh my. It was fun. And, you know, the next day we had some classroom. I had an assignment for the photographers. You know, half the time we would work just as workshop. And then it would be later in the day that we'd bring the travel companions in to join us for the wine tasting in the afternoon shoot. So first part of the day, I was able to, you know, run my normal sort of workshop program. So we would do technique, and then we would go practice it and, you know, all that good kind of stuff. But then we went to Dry Creek Winery for our next day. And there, I thought that was interesting because we had a wine educator. This is what he did. I mean, he talked about the different soil types and climate and, you know, the whole deal, everything about it, and had this very precise tasting where, you know, we went from one to the other. And again, out on the picnic grounds under a nice shady tree on a beautiful warm afternoon in Dry Creek Valley in Sonoma County. Pretty nice stuff. And then once again, we had to force ourselves to wander about and do landscape. But this time, I took them on a back road in Dry Creek that I knew about. We went way back there. In fact, at one point, they were joking a little bit that, hey, does anyone ever come back from any of your tours? You know, the evil plot and all that. And got back a little bit later that day, but it was worth it because I really wanted to cover some ground and show them some of the back roads out there in that valley. And then we still had one more day, and that included another winery, and it also included our class presentation, which was just fantastic. I mean, all the guys knocked it out of the park for the class presentation. Their images were interesting. They took risks. They were creative. They tried things that they haven't tried before. And we had wonderful discussion around all of this. And we did the class presentation during lunch. I usually finish, those of you that come to the workshops, I usually finish with the class presentation, but we did it during lunch, had the travel companions come and watch with us. So we had a nice big audience for the presentation. And then after we were done with that, then we took off and went to one more winery, actually Ferrari Carano, which is a very famous winery here in Sonoma County. And just sort of had a chance in, you know, as the workshop was winding down to, you know, reflect on what we saw during the presentation, reflect on the last few days. I think the wine tasting allowed folks to wax philosophical a little bit. And just had these terrific conversations. And it really made me think that it was fun for me to experiment a bit with the format in this workshop and kind of try some new things. You know, I had always ended with a class presentation. That'd be like the climax of the event. And, you know, and then off we all go. We part ways. But to be able to have the presentation and then be able to, in a relaxed atmosphere, talk about it, you know, after we had a little time to let it sink in, that's pretty good too. So I'm going to have lots to think about as I put together, you know, the workshop season for next year. Now, one thing that I want to mention to you, if you didn't make it to a workshop this year, I'm hearing this more and more from people that attend the workshops, the value of experience, the value of having an experience with other photographers, with a photography teacher, in new places, and just really kind of living and working together for a few days, that's just something that you can't order online. That's just something that you really can't get unless you just get out there and do it. And folks will tell me, I didn't know what to expect, but I knew I wanted to do this. And instead of buying another lens, I decided to, you know, come to this workshop. And I'm so glad that I did. And I just want to leave that thought with you, because I will be talking about next year pretty soon. And I will tell you right now that if photography is your passion, and if you love photography, that you've got to make it to a workshop someday. You have to make it to a workshop someday, because it is fun and exciting and you get better. And, you know, all the things that you worry, well, I don't want to show my pictures to other people. When you meet these other people, all of that just melts away. And in fact, you can't wait to show your pictures to other people, because these are people that you already have a bond with and a rapport with. Again, it just came off beautifully. The wineries thanked me for going through with this, because they said, you know, we're open for business. And by you talking about it and running this workshop right after the firestorm just demonstrated what we're all about here. And I was just happy to do it. So that is just a little peek at what we did for 3 days. Just wrapped up. I just got the studio put back together a few minutes ago. And I'll be talking more about workshops pretty soon. As I said, the new season will be announced in November. And boy, I hope you can make one next year. I think you will really, really enjoy it. All right, just a few updates. As I mentioned last week, we have some new Patreon members. Again, the other thing that I like, and I was just talking about the workshops, is that when I like it, if you're a Patreon member and if you see me at a conference, or if you come to a workshop, or if you send me an email about something, make sure you let me know, because you are really important to me. And if you're part of our inner circle and we have some sort of communication, please let me know that you're part of the inner circle, because I want to acknowledge that, because you are, for lack of a better term, you are a special member of our virtual camera club. You should be acknowledged as such. Just as a reminder, please let me know if we ever have an interaction, if you're a Patreon member, that you tell me that, and don't be shy about it. Just let me know, because that'll give me the opportunity to say, there is another face. There is another face of, you know, the folks that are helping this podcast stay on the air. And thank you so very, very much. I also want to mention that the tiles that we have on the digital store, the advertising tiles for B&H and Amazon, also help support the site. So if you're going to do a little shopping, if you're going to get one of these lenses, the links that I have in the show notes, and you know I have links to all the lenses in the show notes, those links, you can just click on those links, and those are affiliate links. So those help support the show. So if you decide to get that 45mm f1.2 from Olympus, and you click on the link, it takes you to B&H. My affiliate stuff is in there, and you don't have to do anything else, and you're helping me out. Or if you're just going to shop for something else, you know, we have the advertising tiles on the digital store. Just click on the tile first for Amazon or B&H. Then once you're at the site, go ahead and find what you're looking for, and that helps support the site. Thank you very much for doing that extra step. I really appreciate it. And finally, just a huge thanks to our good friends over at Red River Paper. We talked about printing a fair amount during the workshop. We weren't actually printing, but we were talking about it because we had one workshop member, Gary, it was his second workshop with me, who has really embraced printing and talked about getting up to speed with printing and how much he enjoys it and how much he loves Red River Paper and all, you know, the different stocks that he uses. And then, you know, another one's going, yeah, I use it too. And, you know, I really like, Arctic Polar stock, which is also my favorite stock. It has different surfaces. And we just had a nice little printing discussion here and there a couple of times. And I was thinking while we were talking about, boy, I hope this rubs off on a couple of the other guys and, you know, maybe they'll take a whack at it too. But Red River, you know, sort of keeps the conversation going with the whole printing thing, because not only are they selling the paper, but they have the reviews of the printers, they have ink, they have technique, all that good stuff, standing behind this podcast 100%. And they have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. And of course, they have a tile on all the pages of Digital Story. I'll tell you, printing's the bomb. Of course, that is if it's on Red River paper. So that's going to do it for me this week. Wow. Mirrorless is growing up, isn't it? So exciting. I'm so happy about this. Thank you for joining me. I've got a number of things to choose from next week. I haven't decided yet. I'll be here. So please come back and join me. Have a great week. Until then, bye-bye now.